Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
What's good, internet? It's Monday, January 25th, and you're listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 373. I'm your host, Austin Walker. Joining me today, Rob Zachney.
How's it going?
What was that, Rob?
Are you guys not getting me?
Ooh, well, hashtag I heard the hello. I heard
again.
You did hear it? Okay, I didn't. I got noise gated.
Sequel.
I got like a little tiny, I don't know. Something like that. I mean, but the thing is, you sounded concerned or like there was a situation and that you were
Rob is actively, let's tune in to stock market analyst Rob Zachney. Rob, how's the GME doing today? Is Reddit making a lot of money, apparently? Are they... They're fighting.
I'm so pissed we're not rich.
Squeeze? What
off
does that mean?
Bullshit. God damn.
I enjoyed watching you, Patrick, start like try to assess whether or not there is a way to make a little donation to the kids' college fund on the other end.
We can't blow up someone's spot on this podcast. We can't share what this person is doing. But suffice to say, someone in our orbit knew someone that was like, they're just really into like this. Like, what is this, that shitty Reddit Wall Street Bets? And I was like, look, man, I've got some streaming money that I haven't done anything with. Can I just, like, give that to them? Like, some quick Googling was like, I don't know. I think that might be illegal. Let's not do it. And I was like, okay. So instead, I'm sitting here watching a bunch of Reddit kids
make a ton of money.
Yeah, like, It's all fake, is the thing.
Yeah. It's all fucking fake.
Sure, but it is very real to the, like... Recent era poster that I read that was like, yes. Yeah, I got in when it was $4 and I'm about to pay off like a pandemic credit card. It was like, good for you.
Absolutely. No, my point is that the rules. Stock market is all fake. This is like the best illustration of the ways in which it's an untested space. It's been tested in ways, but that like people are going to learn how to game this even more and in more public ways after this. And I can't wait to see it all just explode.
It seems like a lot of bad people. Like, people are making money that would make me upset, but they're at least, it seems like, towards the tail end here, because now I've just been, like, actively monitoring, like, this story went from, like, I don't care about it to, like, being, like, mildly obsessed with, like, the conclusion of this saga. And, like, it closed at, like, 50 per share on Friday. It just jumped immediately to 100.
Yeah.
Like, you doubled your money. Like, that's crazy.
Anyway, I'm guessing you talked about this on the previous podcast.
We didn't. No,
explain what the fuck. Patrick is here. Kato is here. It's the four of us.
Yeah.
Patrick, explain what the fuck you're talking about then. I assume
that's a tall order. Yeah. But my understanding is the internet is fighting with financial people over like the future of GameStop. Like, what is the future of GameStop? A bunch of people were trying to short it.
Yeah.
Don't ask me to fully explain that financial concept. And then a bunch of other people said, what if not short?
The movie, and then, The Big Short.
Yeah, go watch The Big Short. I did know it at some point because I watched that movie and like the explanations were pretty decent. But basically, they're just two competing ideologies of the future of GameStop. And it's resulting in the company's share price just like going through the fucking roof where like it had a 52-week or a year-long like trading low of something like $4.
It was
and,
like nothing.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to... I downloaded an app so I could follow it. it's currently at, I don't know. It went up a lot. It soared past 100 this morning. So imagine if you had spent, 100 shares at $4, You're sitting, Patrick.
41. It's 140. It's 140 okay. right now.
So that's going to crash, like, presumably yes. going to crash at some point. It's just now it is just a question of when it crashes. Like, when do you get out with, like, the people who are just playing with funny money? And, like, it's. So if you want to, like, get a sense of, like, this world, well, one, Motherboard wrote a good, there are a couple good explainers, like Ars Technica, Kyle Orland wrote a good one. Mm-hmm. It's about, like, GameStop as a, like, whole the last year. Jason Keebler-Elf wrote a piece over at Motherboard about the, like, Wall Street Bets side of it, which is the, there is just, like, a part of the internet, like, as there are many, that is just, like, a bunch of, like, amateur, like, traders that are just, like, but they're also, it seems to be consolidated enough as a group that they can now influence the market in the same way that other financial institutions work together to influence the market. And so the fact that it's all collided on this shitty GameStop company, like a company that like seemed to be more or less saved in the short term by the pandemic because video games like rose so exponentially in like personal value for so many people is just... interesting. Does this kill? Like, I don't know. What does this mean for GameStop as a company?
I don't know. I don't know.
Like, this seems bad to be like, at the center of a financial tug of war? Like, that doesn't seem good. No. But maybe it is.
The two sides of the kind of ideological split is basically one side being like, well, this company's fucking dead, right? Right. And then the other company, the other side saying, no, they're going to shift to being a big online retailer, e-commerce. Like Best Buy, e-commerce, not like a Steam competitor, but like a brick and mortar online.
Yeah,
competitor.
I believe they've done pilot, like they've turned a couple of their GameStops into like esports area, right, like basically gotcha, like yes. Hey, remember like internet cafes, like they're back. But now they're GameStop.
It's huge post-COVID. Everyone's going to love to touch stuff other people touched.
Look, man, like, yeah, you know what? If I could, they're like, hey, you can't do anything else, but like this GameStop is safe and you could just go there and just hang out. Like, I'd go, sure. Like, send me to the GameSpot eSport Cafe. Yeah. I'll go hang out there.
Yeah, if you were like, it's 100% safe. And also, you were God, and you promised that to me, and you had omnipotence and omniscience. Maybe I'd buy it. Anyway, that's our e-commerce.
Please write in if you are riding this train. Like, yeah. Tell me your story. Like, what did you put in? Where are you at? Like, has it given you a taste for blood? You know, like I'm curious if anyone in the Waypoint orbit. Is like buying a car off of this. It appears someone that we know that they know is almost certainly
is doing it. Yeah.
And has done quite well from all intents and purposes. So
I guess this is probably the point where people are looking to make an exit from the stock or
I don't know. So it went
be.
From 50 to 100 to 140, right? So at some point it's going to crash. It's just a matter of like, but this is how it works, right? Like I don't do stocks,
minutes.
But it's like,
in the minutes we've had this conversation, it's jumped another $10. It's 153 right now.
Shut the fuck up.
So where does this go?
So you think it crashes during this recording?
We make it to the end of the recording? Like an hour from now.
Why bet against it? I feel like this is going to go on through most of this week, would be my guess. But I don't know. I don't fucking know anything.
Right?
I don't know.
Well, it's at 157. So I guess the flip side would be, there's actually more incentive to short the stock now. And so I could see there being a weird spiral where you had short positions at the start of this that people were covering, which was forcing the stock price to go up. But now it's an inflated asset and it's a bubble. So now shorting it would be an even better option, except people keep buying it now to drive the stock price higher and force those people to cover. Yeah. I don't know how that cycle breaks.
Right, because now that it's becoming an internet meme.
132.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's going to happen.
I
like,
know.
That's,
well,
you can't...
it's fun to say the lower number.
Okay, that's yeah. If you, we could just check you throughout the call. But I just mean, like, the jump from, like, yes. 150 to 130, like, in an instant is just... But, like, I am curious, like, Rob's point of, like, what's unique about this is this happens all the time, right? Like, this is the stock market in action. But what doesn't usually happen is that articles get written about it. It becomes a meme. It then becomes shitposting to buy GameStop stock,
yes.
Where you can download, you know, Robinhood is like one of the more popular ones, I think. Like Acorn is, like, I've seen these like on the App Store, like yeah. when they like are recommending you banking things. And so like it takes what, all of 30 seconds to sign up and like participate. And like the internet loves a good shit post. And so if like buying stock is infuriating financial traders who are shorting, like I'm with Rock. Like Rock? Rob?
I'm with Rock.
Sorry, again, that's Rob's financial pseudonym. Yeah.
Rock Zachney.
Please delete.
Rock Zachney. Now we cut over to Rob the Rock Zachney for any stock tips this morning. Rock, what do you got for us?
I mean, at this point, here's the problem. For me, it's already too rich for my blood, right? Yeah, like, yeah. I feel like if I were already in it and I were playing with house money, I would be staying in it maybe a little longer. But, like, this can only happen, I think, with a stock that's cheap, right? Because like, it's so easy for Redditors to start fucking with that stock price.
Like, $4 a share is
even $50. Like, it's a video game. That. And like, yeah, okay, right. So maybe you doubled it overnight, you know, over the weekend. It's like, cool, all right, well, I'm out. But then maybe you just take that. Yeah, I don't know. Like, at what point does it go out of the reach of like the average person looking at their $1,400 COVID check? And it's like, all right, I'm going to start spending this now. And try and add to it. Can I get that $1,400 COVID check to $2,000 by buying GameSpot stock and make up for the failures of the Democratic Party?
Well, that's been our market minute. A thing we always love to do here at Waypoint Radio. How's everyone doing otherwise, other than this? Everyone have a good weekend? Everyone relaxing okay? Yeah, okay, yeah. It was nine.
Yeah, you know, I've fallen into this weird thing where Jessica become ingrained in the neighborhood kids. Like, there's a handful of kids in our neighborhood that occasionally we would see, but it's like, how do you become friends with those people? I don't know.
Right,
like,
right.
And like, we've just never been able to like sync up with her to be able to. And it's a group of kids that like run a gamut of ages, like from. Like,
I've seen
10.
Cartoons. I know how like groups of kids form in neighborhoods.
Okay, I'm trying to give for context.
You got like the little baby one, and you got like the one who's maybe
there
a
little
is.
Too there's old. There's as young as a 3-year-old and old as a 10 of this group of like 4 to 5, depending on the day.
And sometimes they go on adventures where they learn lessons about life and each other and what it means to be a good person.
And the lessons here has been, so anyway, she got into that group. And now
she's trading GameStop stock.
She's talking. Well, if that includes like coming home with like various like gun objects from like the 10-year-old's house, because they don't go in the houses, but they play in people's garages. Jessica's never had like a group of local friends where we've suddenly had to confront like all these like. We went from like having no parenting decisions of like how much do we trust our daughter to be out of sight to then having to make like 1,000 of them at once, which is like. The houses she's interacting with are like 5 houses down. It's like, okay, right. She's 4.5. She is really responsible. We've always told ourselves, don't be a helicopter parent. And doing that means like trusting the 9-year-old and the 7-year-old that they're going to keep tabs on that kid and like sticking to that. Because like the impulse is I'm going to follow this kid down the block. And I'm just going to pretend like I'm just the cool dad here to hang out with these kids. And it's like none of the other parents are doing that. I'm like, okay, all right, Jessica, I guess I can't see you. I don't know where you are. I'm like Googling like tags you could put on your child. I'm like, no, don't do that. Do not pay $40 a month for the tag on your kid's jacket so you can GPS locate them. No. So that's been my weekend. It's been coming to terms with the realities of telling yourself you're going to be a parent that just trusts their kid. And then, well.
It's stressful. I could see that being stressful. I said no twice and I was like. Well, just on the jacket.
Right.
Yeah. It's four.
Right.
$40. That's not nothing, but.
No. Well, no, but also it would violate the, what I was, you know, it was, you've got to talk about what your parenting style is going to be before you're confronted with the problems. And then you got to try and stick by your guns.
And
so, well, no, the guns are coming into the house.
Oh,
they're water
guns.
They're pretty funny. She got me in the face, so. Anyway, that's my weekend. Nice. Trying to be okay with my child going out of sight into strangers' backyards.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Thing I'm most curious about is whether or not any of y'all scared your faces off with that Resident Evil demo, which I think dropped after the last recording, the last podcast.
Yeah.
I was out of it last week, so I have no idea what happened.
No, yeah. So. There was a Resident Evil showcase a Thursday afternoon last week, in which there was like a really long gameplay demonstration, I think, for RE8 or Resident Evil Village. I didn't watch that because my suspicion has been that that game is like fairly close to being done, and I don't need to watch like a 30-minute gameplay video for like one of my most anticipated games. All I saw was like one screenshot of that the inventory menu looks like RE4. Yep. I was like, cool, great.
Yep.
Like this,
the whole thing looks like RE4. It's like the same setting.
This seems like a spiritual successor to Resident Evil 4, which is great. That's like if you're gonna make like a spiritual successor to a game, a game of the series, like RE4 is like a pretty good template to work off of while they like work on remaking that actual game.
Is that anyway? The conclusion of that was. Happen?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. Yeah. There's too many Capcom. Like,
well, it's just something about the like.
They didn't announce it.
They didn't make one for one though, right? Because like,
well, they've remade that so many times before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of can't do. I mean, they will inevitably remake Resident Evil 1 again at some point. It actually probably has been long enough that they could do an RE2 style.
The pattern that I was noticing was just like 1 and 4 are kind of like the biggest of that original group, right? So like they do a spiritual like remake in 7 for 1. They remake 2 and 3, and then here's the spiritual remake for 4, which makes me doubt, are they actually going to do like just an HD remake of 4?
Oh, no, 100%. They would, yeah, no.
They'll do both.
Capcom,
right? Yeah.
They're going to double dip on this one. There was a report, which at this point, I believe any leak out of Capcom, because they both got hacked and then also just are like weirdly the leakiest Japanese. Hmm. Like just Japanese companies in general just don't. Tend to be like pretty tight ships when it comes to like product announcements and like what is happening with their teams. And there are just like several very reliable Capcom leakers that have long histories. Dusk Golem, who announced they were no longer going to be a leaker because it was stressful, and then just went straight back to leaking.
Yeah.
The RE4 remake was reportedly in development by the RE3 team. Mm. Which I thought that was bad. I did not like the RE3 thing. And if you believe the most recent report is that the RE3 team has like largely been taken off of that project, and Capcom has pushed back the RE4 remake to do something a little more ambitious, which is good. In the meantime, we get Resident Evil Village, which is coming out in May. And they, similar to RE7, they have released a demo that is not content from the main game. It is sort of a side thing. RE7's demo was spectacular and like a real nice indicator of what was to come in that game, which I consider sort of like a modern classic. And then they did something similar here with Resident Evil 8. I forget the Maiden, I believe, mm-hmm. is what the demo is called. Kaito, I don't even know where you land on Resident Evil. So before I give my thoughts, I am curious what you went into this. Did you play RE7? Where are you at with this series and this game in particular?
No, I never got around to RE7. In general, I'm just an RE4 stan, basically.
Okay.
Which is weird because I played RE4 on the Wii. And that's like my only
with the motion controls.
Yeah,
motion controls are great.
Hell yeah,
the motion controls are like the best way to play that
game.
IMO.
Exactly. And that's the only RE I've played front to back. I tried to play one of the RE0 or one of the RE1 remakes that were on GameCube, but at that time, like the tank controls and my young self were like, nah, fuck this shit.
RE0 is also like one of the worst. Like barely, there's a reason they give it a 0. And you know what? You don't even deserve like a number in the mainline franchise. I've heard the update they did to it was okay, but they, like as someone that's an obsessive, even I was like, I don't need. I never played RE0. I skipped right on past.
I like right on past that. Got it in at 4 when it was on the Wii, and then 5 came out, and it was. You know what? 5 looked bad. 5 looked horrible. And so I like never touched the series again. And I meant to go back when they started making the remakes to be like, okay, let's actually see what these other ones are like now that they're not tank controls anymore. But I don't just haven't because of whatever time. So I'm interested in this one specifically because I have the most connection to 4. Like, despite how annoying the whole Ashley mechanic was in that game, it's still you know.
Yeah, you want to ask why they're going to remake that game? Like, because there are, like, parts of that that, like, really have not, like, even Ashley as a character is like, hey, you're going to go back and revisit this? Like, you can't, I mean, you can do whatever you want, Capcom. Uh-huh. People will buy it. You've released RE4 and everything, but, like, Ashley as a character has really does not, like, hold up very well in 20, like, you either have to, like, totally redo it.
Right.
Or just like, yeah, this is a product of its time and just, you know.
It's gonna be what it is. The other parts of that game are still good. But yeah, so I'm like not even who there's this weird thing happening right now with the fucking protagonist of this like new series, right? Like, who the fuck is this guy?
Ethan.
Ethan. He doesn't have a face?
Ethan is avatar pop culturally relevant of the video game characters. Like, RE7, like, I just told you, a classic. And uh-huh. You would imagine part of that would be like, like Resident Evil, like a series known for like strong, at least iconic, like main characters.
Everybody
like,
remembers Leon Kennedy and his fucking
kicks. Who they bring back for
RE7?
Like, I don't know, a guy that they may not have modeled a face for.
Dipshit boyfriend guy.
Yeah. Like, RE7 is many things, but like the arc of Ethan Winters is not one that I stood out particularly.
It is very funny to go to his the Wikia page. For him, the fandom.com page for him. Because it's all just photos of him just out of frame, like face down in the mud, you know.
Having the time of his life.
Yeah.
In the South.
It's extremely funny. And then his two like profile images on the main page are just him down, face down on the ground where you can't really see him. And then his official
promo shot of him with knife and blocking his face.
It's all so funny. It's all exactly like, no, we don't want to show what his face looks like. Don't worry about his face. His face is fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Is he going to be like fucking Wesker's kid or some bullshit?
Right. Well, that's right. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I didn't finish RE7. So I'm sure there was some RE7 Ethan Winters reveals in the very back end of that game. I got through like the bee house. You know the bee house?
Yes. Yes.
And there's the bee boss. And then you go back to the trailer and you get like a better gun, probably, if I'm remembering right. And then you call Mia again for the 30th time. And it's like, we got to get out of here. And I was like, I think I'm good. I had to shoot a lot in that last section. I'm kind of done with this.
But what's really funny is like the trailers for RE8 like constantly have, like, it's almost like Capcom realizes like, okay, we need Ethan he's important to us. Yeah. He needs to be important to you. And so all the characters are constantly just yelling like Ethan Winters. Like what? How did he become so important in the Resident Evil mythos?
I don't know why that tall lady cares one shit about Ethan
and
Winters.
And maybe that will be what RE8 is about, is Ethan will finally take his place along Wesker and the Redfields and the Valentines. The Winters will rise again in
Redfields in this game, right? Village. Like, there's like a
he shows up. Spoilers, I guess, for RE7. Like, yeah, he like shows up at the very end of Resident Evil 7, and I didn't play the DLC. But
why does he look like a werewolf in the art?
Wait,
not
what?
Sure. I didn't see that part, but I did see people talking about that.
You didn't see that shot, Kato?
No. That's also an interesting thing about this one so far is that it's giving. Oh yeah, shit.
Yeah, he's a werewolf. For sure. I had a theory about this, which is a stupid fucking theory. So I'm going to say it out loud. What if he's been a werewolf? Okay, so you know how people in Resident Evil. You know how people in Resident Evil over the years, like, basically got superpowers in terms of, like, what they could do in cutscenes and shit? And it would just be like, you saw like the
smuggling
RE6 especially.
Watermelons in his shoulders.
Yeah, he's just huge as shit. And he's just like, you know, they're doing wild gun kata fights and shit in RE6 and jumping way too far. What if what if during Resident Evil 1? He got bit by one of those dogs. And what we didn't understand was those dogs carried a werewolf gene, the W gene, the W virus.
Right.
And he's been a werewolf secretly on the low for the last six, seven
games. The whole
games.
Series.
The like whole series.
Right. All of a sudden, they'll affected. Be like, cut to, like, I've never seen Chris at night exactly. under a full moon.
Under a full moon, exactly, 100%. And he's been a stealth werewolf the whole time.
And I was the biohazard all along.
Exactly, yeah. That's my theory.
I hope.
It's bullshit, but I'm committed.
Oh, I've played Resident Evil 6. Like, you're good on bullshit. Like, okay. Whatever you can come up with, the Resident Evil series has stared at you, blinked back, and said, sure.
I'm ready for it. I want him to be...
That falls right into the classic werewolf v. vampire situation, which I feel like this is what this is going for, right? Like...
Yes.
Things that are pointing to all the like antagonists that we've seen so far as being vampiric, which mm-hmm. is new instead of just eat like straight up zombies, but
this definitely has that like classic monster stuff, you know?
Yeah.
A vibe. They do turn into bugs though, and not bats, those vampire ladies.
Bug vampires. And mosquitoes suck so. Blood. Oh.
You're right. Mosquitoes do be sucking blood. It's true. I'm one of the things I'm curious about, and I'm guessing in this demo this wasn't the case, but like the demos that they showed, the gameplay that they showed, did have a lot of action. I think one of the things that's interesting about evoking RE4 is like RE4 is the one where the action felt good for the first time, so to speak. Right? It's like one of the ways.
And it was also center stage, right? Yes. Like it was yes. like. The,
this is a game about that in a way that the previous games did not center it in that same way.
Yeah, like the arc of the Resident Evil games is to like start with like the action supporting the horror, and then like that, you know, that ratio changing over time, like making a full switch over where the horror is supporting the action in 4, and then the series being like, oh. Okay, and then just doing that, even just like doubling down on that, like a Redditor trying to fight off a short seller in RE5. And if the culmination of the GameStop stuff is RE6,
okay. 103, by the way, 103 currently.
Resident Evil 6, remember when we got that for a review at Giant Bomb? Brad and I was like, I want to play this, like I'll take this on. For like the quick look, and he was like, I'm curious. And then like the more I kept playing it, where he's like, hey, are you near the end? I was like, dude, I'm like 12 hours in. It doesn't seem like I'm anywhere close. Like checking with me a couple days later, like, are you near the end? I'm like, I'm like 20 hours in. I don't think I'm anywhere close. That game is like 27 hours. Like it's a really long, like it's ridiculously long. I might be exaggerating that in my head, but it felt that way playing it at the time. But that's all to say that RE7 felt like a hard reset, like even more of a horror game than Resident Evil 1, and I think RE7 is... I didn't play a lick of it on a TV. I played that entirety with a VR headset.
Oh, fuck
on,
that.
I find that unfathomable.
It was so bad, Rob. I would play it on the lower floor of our house on the couch, and my wife would just, like... check in on me every, which is like, you screamed pretty loud there. I'm like, I'm good. I play the game maybe 90 minutes at a time. I meant to do the VR stuff as a lark. It was just like, I should see what this is like. And then I'll go back to playing it, you know, normally. And I found it so, I think it's like fundamentally transformative to that game in particular. I think it is a different level of terror. It is not just, I get to look around with my head and that's like a neat, like sort of gimmick, like the like immersion is a word that has like lost all tangible descriptive value, but like that world was so fucking scary, and I crave that stuff. Like I'm constantly looking for it, and so like yeah, I'm here, but like I'm here for like 90 minutes at a time, and then need to take like an actual break. And so the question for me was going to be, because even RE7 loses the plot about 3/4 through, which is just like, hey, you've got too much ammo and we've run out of ways to scare you. How about you just do the shooty? And it's fine. But it's like the first half of that game is incredible. And the second half is just sort of like trying to grasp on to that first half. And so my thought was, well, REA's just going to jettison all that and just go completely action heavy. And I don't know if the demo is indicative of what they're going for, there's reason to be like, you know, like cautious on that prediction, and that maybe this is just a marketing thing. because I think Kato, I don't know how you felt, but like the first half, it's a short demo, 20 minutes kind of max, mm-hmm. even if you're going short. But like that sequence where like you're like escaping your cell,
yeah,
it's fucking terrifying. Fucking like it's horrible. Holy shit, man! Like
you can technically probably finish that demo in under 10 minutes if you just run through it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But knowing that the first time, just due to fear and like moving slowly and not wanting to run into it, I definitely took like 45 minutes just like very carefully moving around that space, jumping at basically every noise. But yeah,
the sound design is spectacular, which it was in RE7. This is a game that I don't know what 3D audio is. I've seen the screen. I've seen the photos. Like I've seen like them putting people in these weird rigs to like how they like calibrate 3D audio. I don't know, but I used like Sony's like the was it Pulse is like their headset, which is you know it's just a nice headset. The 3D audio works with any other headset, but I was like I'm gonna do this in the dark, and it's so good. Yeah. Like the sound design is just immaculate in RE8, and that whole opening sequence is just, yeah, I was scared to go forward. Like, yeah. I don't know what the heck, I still don't know what was, like, rattling the stone walls.
No.
I don't want to find out particularly.
I just ran. I thought I absolutely missed, like, a door I could open just because I was like, fuck it, no, I'm out. I'm gone.
It might be in this hallway with me.
Yeah, I don't
and now
know.
I need to watch a long key animation. Like, open, go.
Fucking, why does this lockpick take so long?
Which is great. The team that works on these games now are so smart. They are so acutely aware of the tropes of their own making, like the Resident Evil tropes. Uh-huh. Like the fact that there's no reason for the taking a key out from your archaic inventory, putting it in, watching that animation slowly play out. Like they're setting that up knowing that they have preempted that with a sequence that indicates that there is some sort of horrifying beast at the back of this hallway, like encroaching towards you. But don't worry, you're gonna take this key. You're gonna have to pull it out of your inventory. Say use. Is this in real time? Does Resident Evil 8 pause the action? I don't know.
No one knows.
Just hit X, and I don't have time to think about it. And then slowly watch the key like go. It's just. So it's so deliberate and so smart.
That's the sound Werewolf Chris makes too.
And it's just they're just working out, operating at a different level to have that much. Yeah, I'm curious how this. You know, I guess Kato, you have less institutional sort of like history with the series than I am, but it sounds like it still works with you, even though like you know you don't have like hundreds of hours in those equivalent animations. But it's just really smart, and this game seems really smart based on this small slice. But Kato, they
play
the voice on the stairs.
Fuck that.
Fuck the voice on the stairs.
It was in my head. I couldn't. The choices they make with sound design are like really just spot on and terrifying. And I was even, here's the thing, I was even playing with headphones and that shit all still worked like out of my TV speakers. Like it's fucking wild. Also, I love like there's a couple tricks down down in the first half of that demo too, where it's like, oh, I know what's gonna happen here with that body or this body, or you know, you expect zombies, you expect them to, and just like there's like subtle ways where they kind of play with that you know, it's like even if you don't know specifically the franchise, there's enough like cultural osmosis to zombie stuff that you're expecting certain things to happen, and they kind of they play a fun little trick down there that I thought was good.
I know which one you're talking about. That got me.
Just like, and oh, someone, that's gonna
someone on Twitter I followed was like, yeah, I'm gonna try this demo, and then like sent me a screenshot. I was like, yeah, I got to that part, and turned out don't need to do this. Like, don't enjoy any part of this. Like, tell me if it's an important video game. I'll read about it. Don't need to experience it myself. So yeah, it makes me hopeful that they're gonna strike an interesting balance or this a same sort of balance with RE8. I'm also, I historically find vampires to be like the least interesting. Like, my wife loves vampires, like in movies and in fiction. And she spent a long time over like our paternity leave. Both werewolves and vampires. The moment you tell me that's like the central focus of like the story, like, yeah, okay, like snooze, like no interest. And she convinced me on a handful that I found particularly interesting. And they make these vampires are scary as shit, Kyle. Yeah. Like, I don't, their house, don't want to be there. Nope. Like, do not want to be, like, nope. the literal and metaphorical table setting that they do in this house. It just picture they paint of like what this family is and like what occurs in this, like they do. There's so much restraint. And they do little morsels of
information that are like, that's not great. It's wonderful knowing that there's like so many things, little bits of information that are hidden, when it also feels like I want to get the fuck out, but I still stay for the little bits, right? Like, I'm still searching everything. Like,
I should leave.
I should go, but hold on.
But I need to open up this door because I saw an interact button.
Are they saying what I think they're saying about their winemaking process? This is interesting.
You find the barrel that's just dumping it out. And you're like, what's that? Oh, that's blood. Yeah, that's blood. Okay.
They got a drink. What do you expect?
I'm listening to this, and it's like, guy who doesn't like vampires is like encountering vampire tropes, and is like, they have wine barrels, nay, a hogshead, and it's full of blood.
It's full of blood. Listen, I lost. You guys don't. It's unbelievable. These guys.
Well, I think I think that's a testament to like it's beautiful. Like, it is an ugly looking game, but it is just gorgeous. Like there are times where you will pause and the textures get a little funky when you get real close, but like there are times where it's like a photographic quality to it. Yeah. Like, the lighting is just it really speaks to, I think, like the sound design, the environmental design, like the storytelling that's happening in how they set up these different scenarios where nothing is occurring. You are just coming into like a mist-like empty space. And yet I feel like I'm on the edge of my seat and do not want to encounter a monster type that I find to be utterly boring. So it's a hats off to like RE8, because I everyone's a fan of, the big vampire, but also, vampire. I'm sorry, I don't, huh?
Dimitrescu? What's the name of the lady? She's got a name. Dimitrescu.
If we get it wrong, she's going to show up and fuck us up.
I fucked it up.
Here she is.
Oh, I saw someone online being like, do you guys think Capcom's surprised at the response to her? Shut the fuck up. They knew exactly what they were doing. There is zero question in my head that they didn't know exactly the thing that they were trying to do with Tall Vampire Lady. Come on.
I want to hear her
like
little
goth girl like crew. Like, come on. Absolutely. Absolutely intentional. Anyway.
$88.
She's big. She big.
Uh-huh.
What did you say, Rob? Was there
$88.
An update?
$88.
It's dropping.
They're dumping. This is now, I'm looking at its 5-day trading average, and this doesn't seem great. I don't know what the other drops were like within days, because that gets flattened out, but
we could be seeing it happen live.
This is like one of those moments where there's a lot of folks who are like, this could just be a good moment to get out. Like, I'm looking at the spikiness on the days when its rise was happening. There was nothing like this kind of like major drop. So, I think there's probably a lot of folks who are like,
this was
like,
fun.
Once it starts, it's hard to stop, because the people who got in early when the stock was lower, like, what interest do they have to like, I'm going to stay in on this and like lose those gains. And the people who bought in high will just try to staunch the bleeding.
Right. So, because they're like, oh shit, I got in late. I got to get out.
A lot of people are going to learn a valuable lesson about the other side of stock spikes right now.
Or are we fools for not hopping on when it hit 90 or 88 or whatever? Because what if it recovers and gets up to 200? And then we're the fools because this was a little opportunity for us to hop in and we didn't take it. Instead, we talked into our microphones.
If we were streaming this, we could be influencing this in real time.
Right.
That's true.
Is that legal? We're going to be really behind by the time this podcast publishes.
Right?
Absolutely. There's stock streams on Twitch.
Yeah.
They're extremely popular. Yeah. They're like,
104. We're back to 104, baby. Yeah. Rally.
Austin's like, I got it. Download that Robinhood app. Like, got in.
Oh God!
I don't work for Vice anymore. No ethics.
This is an inside. Whatever. This is an insider trading. I just learned about this shit on the internet, like everybody else. All right, we should take a break, and when we come back, we can talk about non stock tips and less creepy houses and other normal shit. So we'll be right back.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
All right, we are back with some more gaming goodness. That's what people say on podcasts, right? People
who believe in gaming. Vice's new podcast, Gaming Goodness. We just talk about how games are good.
Does anyone want to talk about how there's a good game? Does anyone have a good game to talk about? Rob,
I have an interesting game to talk about. I don't know if it's good, but it seems real good so far.
All right, talk to me about it.
I'm playing Suzerain, and that is a visual novel, interactive fiction type thing about it is the early 1950s, and you are the newly elected president of a fictional country in a fictional world, but it's, somewhere in a vaguely European-ish area. And you are the newly elected president of a country that is emerging from back-to-back troubled regimes. Mm. And you inherit a political order that has very little legitimacy, that is poised between a NATO-like capitalist-led alliance of nations and a Soviet style alliance of nations. Plus, you are in a contested part of this continent where, aside from capitalism versus communism ideological disputes, there are also just historical disputes between nation states that sort of occur outside that ideological framework. And the way this all plays out, and I think this is the thing that is really impressive. So, like a lot of interactive fiction, there's lots of like hyperlinks within the text to like pull up additional background info on people. It is incredibly dense. Like, you know how when you get on a really good Wikipedia rabbit hole and you're just like, I'm learning so much. And wait, what happened here? So you mean, and you start opening more tabs to understand like causal chains. And like, I wonder if there's some disputes about this element of the history. This game scratches a lot of that itch because it's just full of different entries for different characters and institutions and places in the world. And you as president, this is to me, it feels very much like a strategy game, but it's not one where you're like, I'm going to move the tax slider a little higher. I'm going to click a button to build factory in this building so I can make tanks. This is like you go into a room and you've got your ministers there and they all have personalities. They're all like sharply drawn characters and they have their own backgrounds and allegiances. And you sort of have to listen to their arguments, and you're sort of assessing, like, not only are they presenting me with a menu of options, but my choices here will also affect their relationship with my presidency. Because in the long prologue to this game, like, your character is, like, you know, about the age of a lot of presidents, like in the 50s, in his 50s somewhere. But, like, you lived through all this unrest. Like, it talks about how when you were in college, the parliamentary democracy was toppled by a fascist military coup. And then in no time at all, there was a civil war in the country as the left-leaning generals went to war with the fascists. And finally, the country was stabilized when just a pure, non-ideologically committed military regime installed itself and basically committed to a sort of soft-planned economy. And that went fine until they were toppled. And they were replaced by a reformist regime that immediately started to privatize as much of the country as possible. Mm-hmm. And then that's gone to shit. And so when you step in here, all those forces are still around. You have your own relationship with it. You choose, like, hey, did you stay with the student protesters when the army surrounded your college, or did you run and hide? Are you from a wealthy background, or are you from, like, the country's agricultural heartland? Huh. And where you have a little bit of a blank slate is that you are elected on a unity party platform. And so sort of by default, you are a centrist, nationalist type party, but you have the choice of, like, we have real problems. I need to solve them. I need to deliver on this. And when you look into the people serving your ministry and the people who are part of your party, none of them, there is no ideological heart to your party. You are kind of defining that. But it does mean that people who are part of this coalition you've created can defect. Mm-hmm. And you do have a right flank and less of a concern. This is interesting. You have an immediately threatening right flank in the you can pull up a screen that shows the current breakdown of the National Assembly. And there is a nativist quasi-fascist party immediately to your right, and they were the people who, like, they lost the election to you. They were your nearest rival, but you still beat them handily. Mm-hmm. But it's like you had 37% of the vote. These people had like 25. Okay. Meanwhile, your country has two leftist parties that have cannibalized each other's vote share, and so neither of them qualified for the parliament. But if you added them up, there's about 20% leftist vote in the country. But it splits along the lines of nativism. There is a nationalist left and a purely ideological and more immigrant-based left. And that is a major dispute within their wing of politics. And so, like, you just kind of show you attend these meetings. The writing's pretty good. There are places where I suspect it was not written in English as first language, or the it may not be a full team of, like, English as first language writers. Not it rarely enough that it comes up. Sometimes I find the game a little hard to parse because there's just odd word choices. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, the writing's pretty good. The characters are, like, sharply drawn. And you see these things play out as you realize that, like, you know, for instance, one of the first things I had to do was I was talking to three different economic ministers. One is more of a pure academic background, and he is like the minister of finance, like treasury secretary. But then there is a secretary of Secretary of Agriculture type character who's just an ag businessman and no real, like, academic background at all.
No
just
theory, but lots, a long history of experience.
Yeah. Right. And then you have somebody who is there as, like, a interior minister, sort of, But she's just a Paul from an industrial setting. Like, she's just a good administrator who also doesn't have like firm ideological commitments, except to institutions like the bureaucracy, regional industries, and the police.
Right.
And so they start discussing, they start arguing. And the cool thing in this game is I was worried it would be super overtly didactic at the start, but these are complete, like, I had to bust out a notebook and start writing down who is where within this and what are their ties to both ideological and governmental institutions in this country. Because even though it's very easy to search through the in-game wikis, like, I just started to need to realize, like, okay, in my cabinet, who sits where in terms of political commitments and obligations? In terms of foreign policy, how do these countries stack up? Because outside of your country, they've done something interesting. There is a Cold War situation, except that it's also a bit like, it doesn't, it's clearly inspired by parts of history, but it doesn't map directly. There is a Stalin-like figure who is still on the stage, but the state of play is also very much like Khrushchev era reforms have happened. And so the communist superstate has already had some members of its ideological bloc break off and form more socialist and less communist states with more political participation. But they still have great concerns about the fake NATO that exists in this world. And there is a country that is, in terms of its history, a lot like Russia, has no connection to the ideological struggles of its age, is just a awakening nationalist industrial power. And it's your neighbor to the north and has a long history of antagonism to you. But that could be useful because right now there's three army divisions that just make their home in the capital, just a stone's throw from the presidential palace.
You gotta change that. That's not no, right. No.
And so I'm looking at it and I'm like, it would not be the worst thing if I had a good reason to send three divisions to a border. Like,
or at least two of those. You can't have all that power right under your...
And you're so compromised because the first thing that happens, the guy who swears you in is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, but he got there by serving the military dictatorship like two regimes ago.
Right.
And the Supreme Court can basically invalidate laws like at will and I think amend them themselves. And so the Supreme Court basically forms its second legislature.
Yeah.
And one of the first things in the door is the liberal reform party, and I mean liberal in the economic sense, like they're very pro-business, pro-capitalist, their commitments elsewhere are less clear. But they're like, we got to get rid of the Supreme Court. And I'm like, yeah, I think we do. But that means I've got to kind of throw in with these guys.
Right. I got to get in bed with y'all, which is, yeah, that's really interesting. This game looks really cool. Like there's just like, I think the interface and the kind of like art style, it has that very like, it's very clearly going for like mid-century, you know, that style of map, that style of desktop, like literal physical desktop space. And that stuff looks really good. And it's definitely, watching a trailer definitely hits my like, you know, the style of like game that blends, like you kind of said, visual novel with strategy game elements, in terms of giving you choice. It looks like a lot of the choices are conversational more than they are. Like you said, you're not going to a tax slider here. You're not moving tanks around on a board. You're giving specific answers for particular dilemmas or questions about like, hey, if the Constitution gets reformed, should we change the way the legislature works? Or, hey, should we, like you said, move troops to the border in this scenario? And so I'm in. I'll give this a shot. Fuck it. $15? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sitting there and because like a lot of us have played strategy games where there are event chains mm-hmm. and there are these kind of decisions, and sometimes they become the most interesting way to express ideas about the world. Crusader Kings leans far into this, and that is still a game where you're pushing pieces around a map, and you still have your sliders and your buttons to sort of deal with. But there's something. There's a couple things. One, I'm very curious how where a game like this can fall apart is that you discover that there aren't really that many paths through it, and that all these choices you make are just kind of a flavor, but really it falls into a few buckets in terms mm-hmm. of outcomes. And therefore you start to see the man behind the curtain, and you realize like, okay, like this is kind of a, it wants to give you the flavor of like trying to make these decisions. But in terms of decisions you actually make, the game can't actually accommodate for all the options it appears to be giving you. I'm not sure yet how that's going to play out, because already the number of things that's introduced as potential state changes seems mind-boggling to me. So when you think about like how you would map the different dependencies of decisions, it already seems like chaos, and I'm like in chapter one.
Right.
But on the other hand, in some ways it gets something really good across, which is that in that conversation I had with my three ministers, and this is something I found myself doing a lot in the early part of the game, you do have places where it's like, what do you want to do? Like, here's a menu of options. But even as you respond to some of those questions, you can see your ministers kind of making their peace with it, or kind of sound like they're going to slow walk you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a meeting and you made a decision, but what are the people who are going to execute that decision going to do? How are they going to go about that? And so that's another interesting part of this, where so often in strategy games, you're just kind of God King. Even if you have like electoral politics to worry about, you don't have to worry about, you move the tax slider, it moves, mm-hmm. right? Here, when you say, no, we're going to retain a planned economy for core services for the citizenry. One of the like liberal reformists in your cabinet is like, yeah, I think we can work with that. There aren't that many of them. In the end, there'll barely be any. And I'm like, well, hold on. What do you mean? But the meeting is over. You know, so
yeah. The moment moves on. Yeah.
Yeah. Is he basically be like, yeah, I guess, you know, light rail can remain a public good, but nothing else is, right?
Yeah, that sounds super fascinating. I'm on board. I'm excited to give this a shot. I'd seen this pop up and just hadn't really known. You know, there are games like this that pop up, I'd say, like once or twice a year. And sometimes there's buzz and sometimes there's not. And this has like a bunch of positive reviews, but I hadn't heard anyone I know actually dip into it. So I kind of moved. Also, it came out at the end of the year. So, you know, easy to miss it.
Yeah.
During all that. I want to shout out something really quick that I didn't even know what it was when I first heard the name of it. Kata, did you watch any AGDQ? You're my AGDQ person on this podcast.
Very little this year. Definitely.
Well, there was a...
Yeah, go ahead.
There was a sponsor throughout it for a game called Loop Hero that... That I was like, what is Loop Hero? Like, what? It sounds like it's like a, is that like a synth Guitar Hero?
I've heard really good things about this game.
Patrick, you should play this game.
I've had access since like December, like the demo that's been going around.
Yes.
And usually I was like, oh man, that's just a couple weeks before the game comes out. And it's like the game doesn't have a date yet. And I was like, okay, I'll just.
Yeah. So that's the
I
thing.
Think it's like, close. I don't think it's that far.
I have off, to but. Imagine it's close. I really do. So then, yeah, there was that run of previews for the game that came out, I'd say a week ago, maybe a week and a half ago. At that point I was like, okay, I should try this. So God, it's kind of hard to even talk about what it is. It is you wake up and the world is dark. The last thing you saw was a big skeleton man with an orb. and like some light retreating inwards maybe, and that was it. And then there was nothing. And you wake up and you're on a pathway in the dark. And this is represented on the screen with a little like retro. It feels very much like early 90s computer game interface stuff, more than anything else. And there was like a little white stick figure walking around this pathway. And in the bottom left hand of the screen, you get some cards. And the cards are things like a grove of trees. And you can put that somewhere on the path, or certain things you can put around the path, adjacent to the path, or off to the in the kind of blackness around the screen. And so you put down that grove. And what that grove does is it says something like, hey, when you play this grove can generate a rat wolf or something like that. And that means that when you step in there, or basically once per time period, it will generate like a monster to show up on the path. And when your character gets there, your character fights that monster, gets some XP, maybe gets some gear, and then gets some cards, some additional cards. And those cards you then play to then continue putting stuff on the path in front of your character. Mm-hmm. As this is happening, your character is like remembering parts of the world as it was before. So for instance, at a certain point, I got a vampire mansion card, which when you play it next to the path, it's kind of like anywhere in any of the adjacent squares to that vampire mansion, vampires can start to spawn. And your character's like, yeah, that's right. Before things got all dark, we used to live under the careful watch of the vampire lords who would make sure everything was okay for us, right? And like, is that what happened? Are you sure?
Resident Evil Village?
Yes, exactly. And so what you end up doing is this sort of like, There's a tower defense element in the way that when you're playing tower defense, you're trying to set up like choke points where there's like lots of stuff that shows up. But here what you're trying to set up basically is like a little bit of a dungeon run for your character as they go on loops around the board, basically fighting monsters, leveling up, getting gear and getting resources, which then you take into the sort of strategy meta layer of the game where you're building out a sort of base by starting with a campfire and then eventually getting like, you know, a kitchen and then like a, you know, an alchemy hall and, you know, additional a blacksmith and blah, 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 as you're leveling up, you know, more widely. But then every time you leave that place, the world has gone back to being in darkness. And so you're building out this kind of loop again. Adding more enemy spawn to the map, adding things like you'll get like mountains and rocks. And if you put those down, they'll give you bonus HP. And if you put them next to each other, that bonus stacks. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, a thing that you can get is like a treasury. And a treasury will give you resources every time you play another card, like a rock or a mountain or a meadow or whatever next to it. And if you fully surround it, it gives you this huge payout of a bunch of resources that you can go back to your base and build your base. And like I watched people.
The XCOM base building to the nth degree, right?
Except that it's much lighter than that in some ways because the decision you're making on the loop side is run-based. It's like, okay, I'm going to go out on this run, I'm going to build out a map, and then I'm going to go back to base, and then the next time you go out on the run, the map is just back to being just like a black screen with the pathway that you're then filling up again. And the path is going to be a little bit different shaped, and that means that you're going to put stuff in a different way. And there are a lot of adjacency bonuses and things like that. And I watched gameplay from this, like, again, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and I was like, yeah, okay, it looks okay. And I started playing it, and there was just, like, it really has that one more loop, like, thing of... So basically, as you go around, each time you get into a fight, you get resources. Each time you play a card, you get some sort of resource that you can then bring back to your base. And if you leave, there's a button to retreat back to your camp whenever you want. But normally you'll lose like 60% or 40% of what you have unless you've made it back to the camp tile on your pathway. It's like going around and collecting go or, you know, collecting $200 as you pass go. And if you're on the camp tile, you can go back and bring everything you have with you safely. So it's like, I can go around one more time. I can go fight those like 7 vampires and 12 slimes and, you know, whatever wolf rats are on the way back. And that feeling of like unlocking new cards and the ways that the cards are telling more and more with a story about what the world was before whatever this ancient lich was that showed up and zapped everything and removed everyone's memory. And then also just like there's just a fun sense of mystery as other characters start to work in, and you're like, you know, they see you coming back to the camp for the first time, and they're like, oh, we missed you last time, and we're so glad you're back. And you're like, I didn't see you last time I was here. And they're like, we just wandered in as you left. I'm like, all right, what the fuck is going on? Hey, can you tell me about, do you remember about the vampire lords? And they're like, we should all eat. We can talk about the vampire lords next time. Like, okay, if you say so. Someone is hiding some shit from me. Or everything is existing in this kind of like dreamlike haze for everybody. We're like, no one really wants to remember what that world was or could bring themselves to. And so I'm actually like really, again, it's one of those things where you saw the name, you went like, okay. You saw some footage, read positive previews, and were kind of like, I'll give it a shot. And then I did, and I was like, okay, yeah, now there's something here. And despite whatever my like first blush negative response was, now that I'm starting to see how the kind of deck mechanics work and building new traits, and it is fun to just go out on a run and be like, ooh, I got a really cool sword in this one that gives me a high evade or whatever, and I'm going to build around evasion for this run, and that'll be how I keep my health up. And that is that style of thing is just like really good, and it's fun to play something that doesn't fit so cleanly into genre spaces. Mm-hmm. that like it is. It's a run-based game, but is it a roguelike? Not really. Like, you're not, like, when your character gets into fights, it's like an idle game. It's not like I'm making JRPG choices about what moves to use. Do you know what I mean? It's just right. Like, all right, boom, I'm in the fight. The fight's going to be done in 7 seconds. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so there is like it definitely has that sort of clicker idle game thing, but a little bit more attention, is required, and that actually has made it just like a real pleasure to go around the loop one more time. So that's a Loop Hero. It does not have a date yet, but we're in that preview cycle mode right now. So toss mine on the collection of them. anyone else want to shout out anything? Kata, did you ever get to that game, Amori? That has been also getting tons of great reviews on Steam.
Yeah, Amori, a game that I thought I had backed when it had a Kickstarter in 2014? Which is really interesting, actually, given what it's like. It's a lot of people are comparing it to Earthbound or Undertale and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it certainly has bits and pieces of that sort of lineage in it, but honestly, the game you actually want to look at is Yume Nikki. Mm. That sort of like horror game, which is not what you initially get in Omori, but it's definitely pulling a lot on that. So it's an RPG that is made with like a really great art style. The artist Omo Cat, who has like, they sell a bunch of anime shirts and stuff, like you've probably seen their work before, has been making this game for like 6 years. And so like the art is really great. It's kind of like, pixel art, like 16 bits almost style, but not quite that. Like RPG elements that you're walking around a world, you're not quite sure what is happening, because at first you're like in a looping white room where like when you go off the edge one end, you end up back in the same space at the other. And eventually you figure out a way out into a kind of colorful world, but your little avatar, which is just renamed as Omori, is still black and white, and you have a bunch of friends and you go on some like adventures that are like, we're gonna play hide and seek with these monsters and things like that, and you start to get a vibe of like, it feels very Undertale adjacent in a way, and so like there's certain expectations that you start to get when that happens, but The battle system, for example, has this status effect, essentially, that is your emotion and the emotion of the monster, which forms a sort of like almost like a Fire Emblem weapon triangle. If you're happy, you deal more damage to people who are angry. If you're angry, you deal more damage to people who are sad. If you're sad, you deal more damage to people who are happy. And so that part of the game like starts off, and it's like about like the first hour, I'm like, I'm not sure where this is going or why this game has the tag psychological horror.
Sure.
And then there's a shift here, which I think actually does, let me very quickly click through some of these, because I don't want to get into too much spoilers, but given that it has the tag on it in Steam, you're expecting something to turn at a certain point. And when it does, it's actually, it's very funny. I played two like kind of horror things this weekend, and similar to RE Demo, the kind of way that this is presented, and like this has even less tools because it's a 2D game, right? But like the sound design, the way that this is presented is actually like actually made it terrifying, where like oftentimes I feel like Yume Nikki and stuff like that, it'll rely a lot on jump scare. But they manage actually through the art and through a lot of the sound to really kind of make a terrifying scenario. And you're basically swapped from this kind of colorful world that you assume is some sort of like, you just like assume like, oh, this is a weird RPG world. We're in another land. But it quickly becomes clear that what it is like you're in a dream space, and then there are certain sections in the game where you're like in like quote unquote real like reality. And so I'm like only 2.5 hours in, but it's already set up this kind of dichotomy between these two worlds where I'm curious how things are going to cross over, because the first instance of you being in the quote unquote real world, you like hear the names of your friends that were in the like dream space. But you're not sure like how much of that is like one-to-one, like what are the actual relationships here? It feels like it's like setting up that there's like differences between what you're dreaming and what's actually happening. The other thing about this game is that it deals with self-harm kind of very explicitly, which I wasn't expecting it. Even like there are content warnings on here for let's see, the game contains descriptions of the depictions of depression, anxiety, and suicide, and I thought that was I wasn't sure how explicit it's gonna be, but it is very explicit, and it's within the first 2 hours, so it's like if that's something that you're not going to want to deal with, it's definitely avoid this game. And it's still early, but I think it is actually an interesting kind of way to look at suicidal ideation, but it might be too explicit for a lot of folks. So I'm like, I'm still not 100% on. I'm gonna have to play, obviously. Like, here's the other thing, this game is apparently like 35 hours long. I'm only 3 hours in. Yeah.
When I was, some folks said, like, I'm trying to do better at, like, not just squeezing in like smaller games, like the first week of December, and then like three of those games like worming their way onto my like top 10 list. So I was like, hey, all right, it's 2 weeks into January. What are games people have played? Like, I'll start making a list and like tick those off when I have free time. And like, people had mentioned that, and I was like, oh, like, looks kind of interesting. Like you said, looks Undertale adjacent. And then I looked up how long it was, and I was like, oh, shit, you're out. Like, no, sorry, like 13 Sentinels is taking that 30 hour slot.
Right.
Like, this game is like, you've already, I just can't do it. Often these games, almost on aesthetic alone, you kind of like assume like, oh, the scope must be like a little more manageable, but
turns out
also this game's in development for like a long time, hasn't it? Like
6 or 7 years total.
I saw someone, it was on Kickstarter, you mentioned that, and I think I saw someone asking, like, is it going to be on Switch? And they're like, I backed it on 3DS. I was like, oh, my God. Like,
wow.
Shit.
Oh, so, my God. So just to give you, like, a... you know, a time frame for like what people thought platforms. That's like the equivalent of, you know, those Kickstarter games are like coming out in Wii U. And it's like, what if Wii not? And then come out on Switch.
Yeah, well, just give me the Switch version. Really don't need that Wii U port at this point. I feel like that's so, not
some of them made, some of them made good on it. So, you know, you people out there still got Wii U's. I liked that gamepad. I liked that controller. It's, you know, come on.
Yeah.
Fair.
Anyway, if you're going to keep with it, I'm curious to hear more about it because I think it looks gorgeous.
The art style is really like it flips between like being all pixel art in like the overworld, like you walking around, but the battle art is actually really really cool. All like traditional media looking. I mean, it's probably digital stuff, but still like looks like graphic and crayon and other stuff like that. A really neat look. And the emotion, like triangle is interesting, although very kind of, I mean, I'm again, still very early, so I don't know if that evolves into something, but it feels like I can, largely ignore it at the beginning. So we'll see if it like actually digs into that or if it's just going to be this is thematic, but we're not going to push it too hard, you know?
Yeah, totally. Cool.
One note about that game. When that game came up, a couple people pointed me towards the composer. Slime Girls is the pseudonym they go by online. I think they did the music for Ooblets as well, like the Pokemon-esque game. Mm. They publicly talked about and admitting to some abuse and other. I don't have the allegations or what they talked through right in front of me. But if you go to their at Slime Girls Twitter account, there's maybe some stuff that if that colored you wanting to play the game, go to at Slime Girls and it's pinned to the top of their account.
Good to know. Yeah, did not.
Yeah. It's easy. You know, who would just randomly go look up their Twitter account? But people pointed me towards it, so I want to make sure and at least pass that on.
Yeah. Anyone else want to shout anything out? I know Patrick, you've been trying some other things besides 13 Sentinel.
Yeah,
I know you're
quickly.
Deep on your 13 Sentinels grind still, but
I need to I started playing Hitman, and then I was like the times where I would sit down and like think about playing Hitman. I was like, I need to just keep like on also your... now 13 Sentinels has gotten to the place where if I tried to explain the story, like I actually like set the game down last night and was like, okay, if someone came up to me, I was like, cool. Don't worry about spoilers. I'm not going to play this game. Just like explain to me like what you think is going on at this moment. Like, I don't think I could like bullet point. I could explain a bunch of facts, but I don't know that I could meaningfully explain. Like, it just sounds like nonsense. But I'm really enjoying it. So I'm like, I think I'm 19, 20 hours in. And so I'm starting to like, I finished one of the like routes. Like one of the characters is like, hey, you've made it to the end of this before the probably the end game occurs. So I'm starting to move towards that, and I'm still really enjoying it. And I'm sure I'll write about it as I continue along. The game I just want to shout out is Cyber Shadow, which is being published by Yacht Club Games, the Shovel Knight studio, who is working on a new game, but they are also kind of like partnering with some folks because Shovel Knight was such a big success, and Cyber Shadow comes out this week. I played it on Switch, and it's if you played The Messenger, which was like what if new Ninja Gaiden, Cyber Shadow is like what if also new Ninja Gaiden. But I think I don't think it's as good as The Messenger. So it's like if you haven't played The Messenger, I would tell you go play The Messenger. I really, really enjoyed them. I heard the DLC they put out, like the, I think it was like a tropical themed DLC. I never got around to it, but I heard it was very good. And I liked The Messenger quite a bit, as like a, you know, like a very purist,
action platformer.
Action platformer. Program. Yeah. I think Cyber Shadow is like a little more, pure. It's harder. I found myself dying and not being able to be as lazy in my, platforming and actioning, but I don't know. Yeah, it's fine. Like, I'll probably finish it because I like these types of games, but I don't feel, I don't know. It's like, I give it like a thumbs up, but like, you should go play there are like other types of these games. And if you haven't played them, you know, I'd recommend playing that first. Mm-hmm. But if you're like me and you've played all those, and you're like, I'll just take another. Cyber Shadow is like a pretty good one of those.
Cool. Yeah, it looks good. It, again, visually,
really like gorgeous pixel art.
Great pixel art.
It doesn't quite do like a lot of these games, like a run of fine balance of like want to look like the old thing, but with the technology of the modern era. And this game does like it's probably like impossible to hold yourself to that actual technical standard without creatively indulging. But this one really does feel like it's pulled out of that era, and it's even just wandering around, it is just fun to see all the pictures.
It also has like my favorite thing about a lot of like games of this era, which is they look so inspired by like mid to late 80s like anime OVAs, where like it's a lot of anime cyberpunk bullshit mixed in with your ninja aesthetic. And that is great.
The plot is loosely like there's like a Dr. Light equivalent. Like there's a,
but for ninjas.
No, but like there's a ninja clan that oversees the automation of like this robocalypse. I don't know. It is some bullshit. I love it. Almost worth playing through the first 90 minutes just to see the goofy ass cutscenes for how they try to set up this world. Like, I mean, I should have taken a screenshot. Like at some point there's just like reminiscing about the ninja clan, like, and how they overlooked this robot city. I was like, what are you? You are just pulling. Yeah. You just like you, this is Mad Libs. Like, this isn't a story. like there were just a bunch of underscores, and you're like, got to a party, and everyone got drunk. It's like, okay, so there's robots here. There's ninjas here.
Fill in the blanks. Listen, I'm fine with that.
Honestly, to the game's credit. So
robots look cool. These ninjas look cool. What else do I need? It's great. There's a dragon in this trailer, so you know,
it's great. It's great to look at. It controls pretty well. But I just feel like these days there's a bunch of those sort of adjacent type games. So it's like a good moment to you know, if you've never played those other types, that there are probably other. Or also go play Shovel Knight. Go play those expansions. I haven't played that third one, right? There's three main ones, I think. And which I now look back on and wonder if I had COVID when I had I was terribly sick last February for like 10 days. I played those expansions when I was like isolating from my family, not because I thought I had COVID, COVID isolating, just like no one wants to be around someone with 103.4 fever. I played those expansions in a fever dream, and they were good, except for the third one. I didn't play the card one. So go play Shovel Knight.
People love Shovel Knight. I don't know why that sounded again like I was going to do Milkshake Duck. But
hey, where are we? As we wind down,
we are at 101.10 is where it looks like we're at. It's just been stable, I'd say, for the last hour.
I did see a tweet at some point that was like they halted, like trading, like again. But like, what do they halt? Like, I wish this is the point where like I wish we could toss to finance person. Like, but are they? I understand that you halt
it, like
something
is
rising or falling because you're trying to like stop an anomaly from occurring. But it's just like, that just seems like it's a bet. Like, it's just like, all right, so what, you're going to halt it and like, they're just going to go away. That just seems like that's a dare. Like you're asking Reddit to blink, and like, I'm sorry.
But yeah. But we'll be here when it's time to start trading again and we're going to go hard.
Halting trading is rarely a good sign because it rarely accomplishes what people want. Right. Mm. Like a vulnerable stock that is collapsing, they will frequently halt trading and it will resume collapsing right after trading resumes.
Or it's like when, like, you know, there's a financial crisis and it's like, oh no, like we're about to wipe out everyone's 401k is like halt trading until we can figure out what's happening. Like, yeah, you're right. Like it's never like good news. Like we've halted trading. Yay. Yeah. It's like bad things are happening.
God. Well, on that note, you know, I guess the crash didn't hit us while we were in front of microphones today. We'll see by the time we record again this week where things are at over on the old GameStop Corp stock price.
I saw some tweets saying that they think that there's already maybe evidence that like the people that got on the ground floor are out already.
They're going to start
pulling, and then they're going to target a different one. Like AMC is apparently like a popular target, theaters are going to be in real trouble. AMC was in financial trouble before COVID happened, so I'll get in on that AMC shit though. Yeah, I got no ethical quandaries there.
What's
Let's
AMC
go.
$100 on
AMC.
AMC is what AMC is at $4 right now. Shit.
There you go. You
See?
Know?
Oh. I'm That shit hits $10, you know. Your boy might hop in real quick. I don't know. Listen, I got $10. I could buy. You know, it's one of those things where it's so easy to be like, just buy a couple shares. Yeah. Just buy a few shares.
That's $10. It's a coffee. Right. It's a fancy coffee. You can buy like 3 fancy coffees at the end of the week.
And if it goes well, you're still not fucking rich. This isn't going to buy you a house.
Nope.
You know what I mean? But it'll buy you more coffees later this year.
I can't read the article because I do not have a Bloomberg subscription. Sorry, Jason Schreier.
Did you see the other day when he was dropping that Cyberpunk reported story on the conditions, and he tweeted that you could read it early if you were a Bloomberg, if you had a Bloomberg terminal, but people online thought that was just the generic name or like the name of their like subscription service.
Oh, like their
service,
premium service?
Their premium Amazing. Service and not the, a Bloomberg terminal, for people who don't know, is like a special access to a device and like a network that gives you just like up to the second information on the stock market, along with, you know, whatever analysis and commentary from Bloomberg as a publication. And it's like a super, super, it's like for real professional traders who spend like $25,000 a year for their access to the terminal. And so, yeah, it was very fun to find people being like, well, I could just go subscribe to that real quick to get access to this story. No, you can't. You can't just drop $24,000.
Well, you could use your GameStop earnings to get yourself
a Bloomberg terminal. And then you're all the way in.
But
anyway.
This Bloomberg article was about somebody that, well, I presume based on the headline, the article is about someone who was on the ground floor of this stuff. They spent $36,000 to make and apparently cashed out $11 million.
Jesus Christ.
Money's fake.
Well, can you imagine having $36,000 to just do that? No, never.
No.
Jesus Christ.
Well, yeah, you gotta have money to make money.
Fuck this country. Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, as always, thank you to actually one piece of news, which is the Konami thing we should probably just say into a microphone. Konami reportedly getting out of the games business.
No. So, okay. So.
No? Has they walked this back now?
Yeah, it's now people seem to be. So there was a tweet that Konami was. People took to mean they were shuttering internal production, but it actually sounds like they're just doing a consolidation that has been fairly common amongst like Sega did it. And
Getting rid of their game production division.
But that's just because they're remodeling
what divisions exist in the company to begin with.
Right.
Yeah. It seems like it may just be a restructuring. Now, you know, look, it's, you know, based on Konami's like post Kojima output, like, you know, does it matter if a studio does not make a game, like, you know, is it a game development a house? I don't know. But there's been enough rumors around Silent Hill that I would presume at some point there would be something going on there, but I don't. Just give me a new bad Silent Hill. Come on.
Just give me one. Anyway, on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you, as always, for listening. You can support us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Rob the Rock Zachney?
At Rob Zachney on Twitter.
For all of your best stock tips. Patrick Klepek, how about you?
Follow me, my new Twitch account, Marketplace Minute. I'm going to use the characters in 13 Sentinels to guide my stock purchases.
Ah, okay, good.
At Patrick Klepek.
And Kato, how about you?
I'm just a simple stock trader. If Rob the Rock Sackney says sell, I sell. That's it.
That's it. Just buy, I buy.
Yeah, that's it.
I just send Rob messages. He doesn't research it. I just ask Rob, I just need to give me a... You're just a coin flip, yes or no. Just tell me yes or no. That's how I determine the buy and sell.
I'm at @a_Kato_appears.
Thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Panel Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Down to $94. GameStop. I'm going to have to open up another one with AMC and see if that one starts ticking up. Fuck.
Also, I think a thing I'm curious about is how long before trading desks start paying attention to, like, as long as Reddit keeps doing this shit,
yeah,
how long before you have trading desks watching to see when this is about to happen and then running ahead of the Redditors to pump up the price and basically get that first cut of the profit.
Right, because that's where the money is.
Yeah, and they can move so much faster than... Yeah.
And Reddit's a public forum. Anyone can go there.
Yeah, yeah.
But then what are you supposed to be taking serious? I guess, yeah, well, they could probably figure it out. Yeah, that's probably the... You just buy out someone. you DM someone on Reddit. You're like, hey.
Yeah, what's happening next? Yeah. Who could say? All right. That's going to do it for... we just real quick. Something about how we can't be liable for stock tips. We don't know what the fuck we're talking about. Don't go put money into AMC.
Don't.
I don't know how shorting works.
We don't know.
I've had
any
it explained like
shit.
50 times to me, and I'm like, yeah, that still seems tricky though.
You're borrowing from brokers or some shit? There's a broker involved?
So you can just be obligated to buy that stock, but you said it was gonna be cheap.
Is Rob the Rock a broker?
No, Rob the Rock is an analyst.
Okay.
Rob the Rock, I think,
he's
stays
got
out
a
of the
soundboard
market,
with lots of buttons. Objective. Just, you know, pounds on the live TV.
Yeah. Oh, please, can we get Rob the Rock a
Jim Cramer set up?
Yeah. Like a whole Jim Cramer Mad Money set up. Yeah. Uh-huh. I trust the Rock more than Jim Cramer. Jim Cramer honestly fucking sucks.
Yeah.
So get out of here, Mad Money. All right, that's gonna do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back later this week. Until then, fuck capitalism.
Bye, GME.
But buy GameStop Corp. No, don't do that. Do not. But don't do it if you're going to do it anyway. I don't know that I'm allowed to influence any. I don't know how this works, legally speaking.
Stop talking about it.
I don't want to get fired.
Just put a bleep over the whole episode.
Yeah. Just a tone.
Like in a Twitch, stream, like when you like do like a music violation, like it just mutes it. Yeah. Just mute these whole sections. It just... Yeah.
Dead air.
That's going to do it for us. All right, go home. That's the end of that. That's the end of the saying. It's all that we just said at the very end of it. I go home. Peace.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.